saying X amount of years, and you're saying, well, we're not quite ready to commit to those number of years, but...
No, I don't know where that came from.
Okay.
We've never said that this was a short-term plan. Believe me, we wouldn't be going through this if we were only going to be there 5 or 10 years. So this is part of a 50-year plan.
Mayor, if I could just jump in on that point, though. That your description says that you're planning to put some kind of housing at this site?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So is one of your financing tools going to be tax credits?
Yes.
And tax credits come with what kind of covenant for affordability?
Well, we're going for new market tax credits, and they have restrictions on them as well.
15 or 30
well,
years.
I think there are 10 years.
10 years.
But our DDA with the PDC doesn't allow us to sell the building and use it for another use without paying back the money that we're getting from PDC plus the cost of the land.
And that's a deed restriction, right?
I believe it is.
It can be made so.
Good.
Thank you very much. We now have how many supporters of the applicant signed up?
16.
16, and we have how many minutes for the supporters of the applicant?
Three minutes.
Typically three, but it's at your pleasure.
So let's try to get it in 1 minute each. Okay. We have another council item today. One minute. Okay. First three,
please come on up. Stephen Ying, Howard Weiner, and Patrick Gortmaker. They'll be followed by Paul Verhoeven, Peter Englander, and John Werner.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome back to the City Council Chambers. Glad you're here, Mr. Ying.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Stephen Ying, President of Chinese American Citizen Alliance. Today I'm here representing the Chinese community in Old Town Chinatown. So the 30 Duck and Cannon building has no role in Chinese community and history. That's no role. I'm glad that your staff report highlighted the 10 block of the Chinatown. I wish the landmark committee have more sensitive to the Chinese community, because before it disappeared, the Chinatown will be disappeared in the Portland area. So I'm continue my planned conversation. Old Town Chinatown have many challenges to redevelopment, such a height limit and historical site. And preservation is in both our vision plan and development plan, and there are many success over the last past decade. The neighborhood engaged in a development strategy of North Old Town Chinatown with the help of the PDC and support of the neighborhood. Several key blocks in North Old Town Chinatown were identified to redevelopment of new and mixed-use opportunity. Block 25 was identified for the permanent home for Brand Chase House with a new facility could meet the needs of their clients and provide safe transition housing. The remaining of three quarter block would be mixed-use development for active ground floor retail with housing above that included middle-income and market rate and homeowners opportunities. This included with support from the neighborhood, the removal of both Dirty Duck and eventually the excess branches house after they moved into their new facility. The decision to remove two contributing structures was not done without consideration for the district and the nomination, but was seen as a greater benefit to achieve the difficulty balance of better use of health, achieve the goals of housing and about 60% MFI and create a significant northern gateway into Chinatown. We ask you that to support Branches House request to remove the Dirty Duck building and proceed with the first step to bring the new development up to Block 25. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Weiner.
Howard Weiner, former chair of the Neighborhood Association of Old Town Chinatown, former chair of the Visions Committee in Old Town Chinatown, and a member of the Commission to End Homelessness and formatting the 10-year plan. I will be brief. At 30,000 feet, our neighborhood has worked for the last decade with all of our social services and helping them restructure in such ways that the rest of the community can grow. And what that means is by new buildings and getting people off the streets and inside. We've been successful with Union Gospel Mission. We have now the Access Center that's being built, and we have the plans for the Blanche House, which you've seen we have spent numerous meetings with. At the ground level, our neighborhood has struggled with protection versus preservation. And that, to me, is really what this is about. And it's a deeper discussion than you're going to have today. But at some point, we have to decide what buildings to preserve and have the tools to preserve those buildings and not just protect buildings. Any one of you, I'm sure, have walked through Old Town Chinatown and have seen some of the buildings in disrepair. We need the tools to either bring them up or make that hard decision that these buildings need to be rebuilt in one way or another. And one last thing, if the big earthquake happens, before we reinforce all those buildings in Old Town Chinatown, we will have Old Town Chinatown falling to the ground. So that's our future if we don't move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. So they've used up more time, so you have 5 seconds. Now go ahead.
Patrick Gortmaker, co-chair of the Land Use Committee for Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association. Following up with what Stephen and Howard have added, at least from the ground level, for somebody that's been participating in the stakeholder groups for the past 7 or 8 years on this particular block, Old Town Chinatown continues to struggle with redevelopment opportunities. There are few blocks left in Old Town Chinatown that offer game-changing redevelopment opportunities. Block 25 is one of those. I also want to be clear that Old Town Chinatown has honored and preserved and protected the resources that we have felt are worth preserving and restoring, the White Stag Blocks, Musolf Manor, the Biltmore Hotel. The list goes on. This was long before the 2004 Historic Code Amendment updates. Block 25 is critical in finding the home and services for the Blanche for them to continue in that location and the neighborhood to realize the rest of the development that was born out in the North Old Town Chinatown redevelopment strategy that was accepted and adopted by the Neighborhood Association presented to the PDC Commission. We hope that the Blanche can move forward and the fruition of the development of the rest of that block can happen. Thank you.
Mayor, if I can just observe that since Patrick's here, that Patrick's been working with the city and a group of stakeholders to develop guidelines to allow homeless ministries to serve meals to folks on public property subject to good neighbor agreements and restrictions. It was very controversial, but people like Patrick got in and helped us develop reasonable guidelines. They're now functioning with a permit and with community support. I want to thank you for the work you've done for us.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony.
Next three, please come on up, are Peter Englander, John Warner, and Doreen Binder. And they will be followed by Brian Furschweiler, Rich Ohring, and Patrick Daly.
All right. This is a seasoned group of testifiers, so I know you'll come in at 60 seconds. Mr. Englander.
Ready to get so. Peter Englander, Central City Manager, Portland Development Commission. The Blanche had resources identified in the PDC budget starting in the 05-06 PDC budget to build a new facility in line with neighborhood goals of treating their guests more humanely and by serving more people at one time and locating their queuing inside. Once the Blanche House announced that they were ready to proceed in late 2005, the neighborhood asked the PDC to create a redevelopment strategy for that area, for the North Old Town Chinatown area. Given the large public holdings and the intricacies of locating community-based organizations, as well as the importance of the block surrounding the Lansu Chinese Garden, the North Old Town Chinatown study served that purpose. And an early step included consideration of multiple locations, as you saw, in partnership with the Blanche House, as long as any relocation was in close proximity to the Blanche's current facility. At the same time, PDC was also directed to find a location for the Resource Access Center as an enhancement for the transition project's operations. PDC was similarly advised that locating the facility, now known as the Resource Access Center, needed to be in relative close proximity to the Transition Project's current location as well. In addition to citing these two community-based organizations, the 2008 North Old Town Chinatown redevelopment strategy built upon the 1999 Old Town Chinatown Development Plan and emphasized the following objectives. Balance of uses. The neighborhood has been very eager to enhance the balance of housing in the neighborhood to include more workforce and market rate housing. Catalyze active uses in North Old Town Chinatown with a mix of uses and a design that had the greatest chance of success. Create a northern gateway that supports the artistic, cultural, and historic assets of the area, as well as continuing the continuing evolution of the neighborhood.
So I need you to wrap up.
Yeah. Complement the significant investment of both the Chinese Garden as well as the newly built festival streets. Given all these factors, and after a number of public meetings, the stakeholders recommended and the PDC board and City Council approved a decision that met with more public consensus than any other option. That option included providing the subject site as a new location for Planche, which allowed them to continue to serve while a new facility was being built.
Commissioner Fritz.
So who owns the parking lot, the surface parking lot on the rest of this site?
The City of Portland owns it, different from the Portland Development Commission.
Okay. And do we know who we lease it to? Because I saw in the previous presentation that there's a 99-year lease, and that's why we can't build on the rest of the block.
The requirement on that block is to provide parking to Northwest Natural as part of the transaction to create the land available for the Chinese Garden. So there's that long lease that you referenced to Northwest Natural.
Thank you.
We can develop it. We just have to preserve their parking spots.
Correct.
So we could find some parking somewhere else and use the rest of this block. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Warner.
Thank you. John Warner, Senior Development Manager with the Portland Development Commission. I manage the housing development section at PDC, and which has since been relocated to the Portland Housing Bureau. At that time, pursuant to the previously discussed stakeholder and public participation processes and the direction from the City Council and PDC, we negotiated a development agreement with Blanche House for the development of their new facility at the Dirty Duck site. I just want to note that the Blanche House facility, its development plan is consistent with the mission and the goals of the new Portland Housing Bureau. And lastly, that the city funding for the Blanche House of Hospitality that's financing the housing component of it brings with it a 60-year regulatory restriction.
How many years is that, John?
60. That will require that the facility be used for affordable housing for well into the future. So I think that should.
And we could put it in the deed too, right?
Yes, we could. Well, this will be a recorded regulatory restriction, but I think you could put it in the deed as well if you felt so inclined.
The point that the concern that it could be flipped, or it's not going to happen.
No.
Ms. Binder.
Doreen Binder, Transition Projects. I love Old Town. I love Old Town Chinatown, and I think we need a vision. And we've established what that vision is. And part of that vision is we want a mixed community there. And I think Blanche House is a critical piece of it. As we developed the Resource Access Center, we made some choices at the beginning because we weren't sure where that building was going to go. And when we realized that it was fortunate that we were going to be near Blanche House, we did not put in a lunchroom and an area for that. So the continuation of Blanche House is critical. And I support their move to this block. I mean, we went through all of this, Block 25. I'm having flashbacks being here. But at the same time, I support Blanche House. I really would like us to come to some conclusion about the historic district and what is important there. I think that's equally important. And precedent is important. But Blanche House has set its precedence of its importance here in the community, and having a neighborhood that's falling apart is not what helps a historic district. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony. The next three.
Paul Verhoeven. Sorry, I think he did. Okay, thank you. Then we'll go with Brian Furschweiler, Rich Ulring, and Patrick Daly. And they'll be followed by Bill Riley, Mike Andrews, and Al Johnson.
So welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad
Thank
you're
you.
Here.
Mayor Adams, Commissioners, my name is Brian Furschweiler. I'm the Director of the Blanche House of Hospitality. Even though you may not base your decision on our mission, I think it's imperative you just hear a few highlights. We did open February 1952, serving two meals. Over that period of time, up to today, we served over 14 million meals. In 2009 alone, almost 300,000. Thousands of men have called Blanchet their home, and that home is deteriorating. Half of my budget goes to utilities, but most important, as you've heard before, the line on the streets. That's the critical to get them off the street, and this new building will allow for that. We are the largest meal site in the city, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner 6 days a week. Sundays we do close down. It's just imperative we have this building or have a new building, and we don't want to move from that from our site. 5,000 volunteers come down yearly and help us volunteer or help us serve meals. A lot of vendors come down, people dropping off goods, clothing, foods. They know that location. They know Blanchet, and it's imperative that when you make this decision, you take that into consideration that we will be there probably for another 50 years. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Rich Elring. I'm the president of the board of directors for the Blanchet, but before my minutes start, I would like to recognize two people here today, the original founders of Blanchet. I'd like to introduce Mr. Gene Feltz and Mr. Dan Harrington. These are the University of Portland students, some 82 years young. Gene is considered one of the four founders, along with Pat Carr, Danny Christensen, and Jim O'Hanlon. Dan Harrington is the first president of the board of directors for the Blanchet. They answered a call, a challenge by a priest who said you need to do more than plan social events. And as Brian referred to last year, and I'd like you to write this number down, 290,426 meals were served at the Blanchet House without one penny of your money, one penny of the city money. One of the things that I want to let you know is that it's a great gift that these gentlemen gave us. It's a gift to the people who live there, to the hungry who eat their meals there, and to the volunteers who get a great feeling out of being there. Quickly, I'll tell a quick story about my daughter, Emma, who is 10 years old, was serving meal with me one day in the crowded little kitchen area. She was tired. We'd been standing for over an hour, and she looked at the door, and she said, "Dad, they just keep coming." And I said, "I know, honey. They still keep coming. We need the Blanchet. Portland is a city that works. I know Portland is a city that cares. And gentlemen and Ms. Fritz, the hungry are going to keep coming. And you need the Blanchet to be there. And we ask that you please let us build this new building so that we can feed the hungry in the city of Portland. Thank you."
Thank you, sir.
My name is Pat Daly. I'm the house manager of the Blanchet House. For the last 5 years, I was asked to address the program there and how I ended up there. After 20 years of successfully drinking, all of a sudden it didn't work. I ended up very sick, homeless, penniless, and thankfully hungry. And I walked into the Blanchet House, and through a lot of fortunate coincidences, I ended up living there. What the Blanchet House offers is a safe environment. You're held accountable for no drinking, no drug using. It offers 6 days a week you're going to get up and go to work. It gets you out of your head. It gives you something to do with your time, even if you don't get into the whole noble aspects of what's happening there. You keep busy. Eventually, once you get out of your head, there's community there. There's a lot of support. The people coming in and eating there have been coming in for 15, 20 years, some of them. So we're their community. So that's how I ended up Blanchet, and that's really briefly what's happening with the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. So how many more people? Thank you for your testimony, gentlemen.
We have five more.
So it's important. We have we still have to go through this process, and then we have a significant code issue after this topic. So if your testimony is on the proceedings about demolition, then great. But the testimony about Blanchet House and the great program that it offers, we know that. So the question is about demolition and the application in front of us. So if there's anyone who hasn't testified that feels like they have a point to make that has not been heard.
A point that perhaps hasn't been made before, Mayor.
That's what I meant. That hasn't already been heard. Carla, what do we got?
Okay, the next three who have not spoken are Bill Riley, Mike Andrews, Al Johnson.
Excuse me. Thanks. I'll be brief. I'm Bill Riley, Portland, Oregon. I'm also a board member of the Blanchet House. We we signed the DDA with PDC about a year ago. Since then, we've been spending a lot of money getting to this point with architects and surveyors and engineers and fundraisers to the tune of probably close to $300,000. If we had to start over at this point, it would be a tremendous impact on our budget and our ability to get this project done, number one, and it would delay construction significantly. As you know, this is a great time to get into construction. We're hopeful to get into construction yet this year, and we don't want delays that would impact the cost and drive our costs up. We're going to be spending in the neighborhood of $10 million putting lots of people to work on this project, and we just hope that there's no more delays. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, pardon me, Mr. Mayor, members of the commission, my name is Mike Andrews. I'm the Director of Development for the Housing Authority. I'll try to be very brief. The Housing Authority is your developer of the Resource Access Center. You asked us to move forward that development project, and we did so in a way that was very much linked to the Blanchet House. We're linked by both common vision and a community process that resulted in the siting. It was 2 years ago this month that the siting decision for the Resource Access Center in Blanchet was finalized here at City Council and at PDC. The RAC has since started construction. We plan to be done in May of 2011 and very much look forward to Blanchet being open and, as Doreen Biner testified, being able to provide food service to clients of the Resource Access Center. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Al Johnson. I live in southeast Portland. I'm a neighbor of the Seven Corners area, and I have a handout here in case I don't get through my full minute, which has a picture I took just the day before yesterday of the vacant lot at Seven Corners, which is still vacant because it took them into the downturn in the economy to get to the historic review process. So they went back with three or four different versions of a perfectly good initial design for a low-income housing project over there. That was a very costly loss to those who are not able to be in that kind of housing right now, and it was a very minimal benefit to the neighbors who benefited from that process. We wanted to offer that perspective and also just let you know that I agree very strongly with what I've heard from a couple of the commissioners, and I disagree quite strongly with what I've heard from staff and your council about the precedent issue. I think that there is a precedent issue here. It is one in which you have your opportunity to show that you can make critical and independent judgments, exercise the discretion that you've been given. I think the Blanchet House's benefits and what it's going to be doing are highly relevant. They are part of the balancing process that's called for by the policies in your goals. And very briefly, I'd just like to let you know that I've been practicing land use in Oregon, outside of Portland, for about 30 years, including several large siting projects where I served as special counsel, including the downtown transit station Eugene, the Corvallis High School, Fifth Street Saturday Market. I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I am well aware that there is a tendency to treat all cows as sacred cows in this process. I think it's going to be your job in this process to be able to tell the difference between something that is part of the artwork and something that was just brought in around the edges. And my paper, and I'll stop right here, does point out some of the background in which we're finding that the historic preservation process and the district drawing process is quite fluid, expansive, easily abused, and whether or not something is inside or outside of the frame is not going to very often be the judgment of a Leonardo da Vinci. It's going to be a result of a political process trying to round out corners, make people happy, and make sure you've got the votes in order to make the district happen in the first place. So please do exercise your discretion and let this project go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Last three who signed up were Craig Lewis, Caitlin Callahan, and Dan Petrusich.
Was that Dan Petrusich?
Actually, I was just going to read a letter that was submitted by Richard Harris, former executive director for Central City Concern. In the interest of time, I'll just go ahead and submit it for the record.
That'd be great. Mr. Petrusich, haven't we heard from you?
Yes, you have, and I'll pass.
Thank you. Hi.
And I'm Caitlin Callahan, and I'm in the neighborhood, and I just wanted to, it's not actually about demolition, but I just want to testify on what great neighbors they are. They're an asset to the community. It would be unfortunate if this didn't go through. We need this in the community. I work for the Children's Cancer Association across the street, and they've been so helpful. Their members and guests come out in the community and help us and then help clean everything up. It's been a great asset.
Great, thanks. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, we now get to the opponents of the applicant, if there are any.
We have four people signed up. First three, please come on up, are Tanya March, Art DeMiro, and Peggy Moretti.
And a principal opponent.
So is there a principal opponent? No? Come on, and come on forward and sit down. So we'll give you 3 minutes each so that it's about balanced. Who would like to go first?
That's me. Carla, were you able to hand these out? Or? Okay, thank you. Mayor and City Commissioners, long time no see. The City Council is once again placed squarely in the middle of a debate involving historic preservation. The reason, in a haunting parallel to Skidmore Old Town, is the regretful lack of coordination between the city agencies, which has generated direct conflict between disparate urban planning visions. The Bureau of Planning, through the Central City Plan, sought to revitalize Japantown Chinatown through the codification of density through height limits and FAR, 9 to 1, 350 feet, as you already heard. Then, in stark contrast to the increased density and height incentives, in 1989, the Portland Development Commission nominated this 10-block area to the National Register of Historic Places as a historic district, including listing the Kiernan Building as its first contributing resource. Such designations impose historic design review and associated protections to guarantee the integrity of this culturally historic neighborhood. Notwithstanding the district nomination, urban planning efforts proceeded with minimal attention to this historic designation. We believe that the Neighborhood Association and PDC would admit to you that of the 10 blocks in this district, four of them, as you see outlined in dotted lines, four of them hold promise for full block redevelopments that would likely consist of mid-rise construction. These blocks are highlighted in the above graphic. These four blocks, which represent 40% of the land of the historic district, also include seven contributing structures. While many development interests will surely be inspired by this potential, historic preservation urban planners fear the prospect. Our direct point is that the city has launched two directly conflicting visions. One vision necessitates the demolition of low-scale, admittedly often architecturally modest structures, which severely underutilize aggressive density ceilings and is propelled by the prospect of multiple full block scale development projects. The other vision calls for protection of this unique cultural district rooted in turn of the century commerce and Asian heritage, seeking rehabilitation of existing resources and sensitive infill that reinforces the district's character. We recommend that City Council charge the appropriate powers to reconcile these divergent visions so that property owners who are interested in redeveloping their sites and buildings clearly understand that the city expects what they expect of them and will allow them. Conversely, historic preservationists deserve to know how committed you are to preserving and restoring this cultural district. We believe choices available are one, delist the district from the National Register in order to remove the impediments to urban renewal through new and more dense construction, or lower density ceilings through the Portland plan process and direct BPS and PDC to support reinforcement of the historic district through creation of meaningful historic design guidelines and channeling public subsidization accordingly, or explore reduction of the boundaries of the historic district and direct BPS and PDC to amend public policies to firmly protect this cultural core.
Thank you, Mr. DeMer.
Yeah. I know you have experience in redeveloping historic properties, and so I'm struck by the difference in character of the proposed building in its image and the current building. Would it be possible to preserve the facade of the current building and do essentially what they want, but incorporating some of the features of the current building?
That's an interesting compromise. Some would argue that that splits the baby and creates a monstrosity where you're keeping a facade and basically building a building behind it, and in this case would exceed, you know, two or three stories above the existing facade. It's certainly something to explore. Some preservationists would find that jarring, but that we did keep the facade, the Simon facade, which is not far, just a few blocks from this district. And so anyway, the point is it's an option. It would be a design challenge.
And would that still count as demolition if part of the building was saved? Would it need a demolition permit to be able to do that?
I believe the answer is yes to that.
Thank you.
So it'll be demolition.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Hi, I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm the executive director of the Historic Preservation League of Oregon. The HPLO agrees with the Bureau of Development Services staff recommendation not to approve the demolition of the Kernan building for all the reasons stated in their report. We echo the comments submitted by our colleagues separately at the AIA Historic Resources Committee and the Bosco Milligan Foundation, and do want to emphasize the following points. We wholeheartedly applaud the work of the Blanchett House and fully appreciate their desire for better and expanded facilities. So our comments are not in opposition to their goals and project and concept. But we are nonetheless concerned about the precedents that, despite what people are saying, are not being set here, we feel may very well be set here for the district and for how the city respects and treats historic resources. I'm sure you would agree that city-owned historic resources should not be allowed to deteriorate to the point past repair, and that the city should uphold the same standards of stewardship of historic resources as private citizens are asked to do, private owners are asked to do. That it's not acceptable to demolish a contributing building in a historic district without convincing proof that it is, in fact, beyond repair, and that every effort be made to adapt and reuse that historic resource as part of a redevelopment project. We're concerned that we don't want to start to see a domino of demolition through the district. What other historic resources could you make all these same arguments about? And many of those might be in need of an extreme makeover, but still have great value. What's going to happen to the current Blanchett House? And by relegating input from the preservation community to the end of the process instead of the beginning, we feel that opportunities for some other constructive input to the process have been lost. And we're frankly sorry that we have to appear as the quote-unquote opposition, because we really don't want to be opposed to the efforts here. We'd like to remind the city that the HPLO, the Bosco Milligan Foundation, the AIA, the Landmarks Commission, and the Preservation Committee as a whole does not seek to put preservation against, at the expense of the greater good of the community. We think we can have both. And certainly there are times when compromise is called for. But in this case, we're not convinced all the options have been fully explored. And in the future, we'd really like to see the Landmarks Commission and the Preservation Committee brought into the process much earlier on so that we can help identify some of these other options. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi.
Hi, my name is Tanya March, and one is a secondary resource is not like a grade of maple syrup. We aren't talking a lower subgrade. A secondary resource is part of a time period definition. There are primary resources. They go into a particular period of time. Secondary resources are to a particular area of time. No preservationist went through that district and ranked the quality of these buildings. It's not a less quality building than other buildings. To say that because it's not part of the Asian heritage of that historic district, I believe Tim said there are 7 other buildings that are not part of that heritage. To say that then that disqualifies it from being part of the district concerns me. There is also concern to me that the second site that the Blanchett House selected and decided could not be used back in 1999 was because of its proximity to the MAX trains, that they were concerned with the amount of people that foot traffic that they have to their food service, that would be an unsafe site. Since that time, we now have more train service and train service that is closer to the Dirty Duck, i.e. the Green Line. So that now the reason why one of those sites was not selected is now the same condition at the current site selection. I'm also concerned that as a city, we're only going to be concerned with high aesthetic architecture. That we're only going to be concerned with preserving the buildings of the elite and rich of Portland, that we are no longer going to be concerned with common buildings that may not jump out to us as aesthetic gems, but are part of the heritage. And that's why districts are different than individual denominations. They're supposed to show how a larger neighborhood worked over time and why a commercial building would be relevant to that district.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Can I ask one question of Art?
Sure.
And this may be true of all the panel, but is the real concern here with respect to this particular building that it's going to set a precedent in this body here that we're going to allow future demolitions for block developments, as opposed to sort of the merits maybe of this individual project? I mean, am I putting words in your mouth, or is that?
No. Commissioner Saltzman, on the Landmarks Commission, when we wrestled with this advisory, we were very much burdened by the fact that this was the first case, and wondering, because the criteria are fairly broad, you know, meeting on balance comprehensive plan, we're afraid that the interpretation is so broad that any justification could be arrived at that to demolish a historic building. I mean, every new building will have new uses that will be revitalizing. It'll offer attractive architecture, you would think, et cetera, et cetera. So how do we differentiate? I think that that is true, that that's part of the fear. And I think part of the fear is because it's part of this district, which is also already a very fragile district, and also because, as I said in my testimony, there is so much active planning going on now that is, I have to admit, is designed for more demolition. Now, there clearly will be more demolition requests in this district, as the plan shows. And so there is a fear that the testimony today will be used for the next building, perhaps even the current Blanchet House, perhaps might even be next.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The last person who signed up was Kathy Galbraith.
Ms. Galbraith, welcome back. Glad you're here.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Galbraith from the Bosco Milligan Foundation, and I want to thank Tanya, who previously addressed one of the issues I was going to bring up, which is the primary, secondary issues in National Register historic districts that are not qualitative in terms of how important is the building, but has to do with the relative age of the district. Primary buildings are always the oldest, and the secondary buildings are those that follow in the second period of the district's significance. We also believe that there's a precedent-setting demolition application here. It is the first one since the code was revised, and there are multiple other low-scale buildings throughout the district in various states of repair or disrepair, including several other buildings designed by E.B. McNaughton, who, despite the comments that you heard earlier, was a significant practicing architect in Portland for 30 years, and among his many civic roles was a president of the Nippon Society, which became the Japanese American Association. We've had the applicant's rep misunderstand, disregard the criteria of the National Register, its historic districts, and how those are adopted and applied by the National Park Service. The district was established under Criterion A and Criterion C, despite the testimony that's been presented before you today. There are some facts and some ironies here that I think you need to know reflect the reasons that we're here. We have a contributing building in a National Register historic district. The National Register Historic District nomination was prepared by the Portland Development Commission in 1989, and it was approved by the National Park Service. Portland Development Commission bought the Kiernan Building in 1999 with public money and has not maintained it since then, so we have a demolition by neglect through that lack of that argument being made through lack of maintenance. PDC is not providing public money for its demolition. The other aspect of this deal is that the current Blanchet House goes to the Portland Development Commission when this deal is transacted. And we want to know what's going to happen to the historic Blanchet House building, which is a primary building in the district. This is not just a demolition application, and that's the issue that Archie Muir raised about the convoluted process that we have. And I think the best suggestion that I can make is this demolition application be considered as part of the full design review process, all of the steps that are supposed to happen when you pluck a demolition application out from all of the following steps that have to be pursued and be successful for this whole development to proceed. You know, it doesn't really work for anybody. It doesn't work for you, doesn't work for us, doesn't work for the applicant. And so I wonder why this demolition application was filed now rather than the full meal deal with all of the steps that need to be taken at one time, so we can really talk about the relative merits of the new building and successful design review.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. All right. Rebuttal by the applicant. How much time do I give him? 5 minutes?
Okay. Open zone once again. I guess a couple quick points we'd like to share is that we think that the staff report and some of the issues associated are their concerns are based on two general concerns rather than on specific criteria points. If you look at the PowerPoint that is a part of the record and some of the things that we've shown, we've addressed 17 of the 19 applicable points on criteria and on the plans and policies, and we meet those. And we'd be happy to go through, if we were allowed time, you could ask questions, however, we can show you that we actually do go through and how we meet that process. The intent of this review is to actually go through and to set a policy of selectively allowing demolition to achieve greater community goals. You are the gatekeepers. The fear that's been expressed and what we've been hearing through this process all along that somehow you will not apply good judgment, that you will not exercise discretion, and you're not capable of determining what is in a better, the policy of the greater good, is humorous to me. I think that there's a thoughtful process of which you would all engage in to be able to make those decisions, and therefore the whole fear argument about what this could mean or what it should be is, I don't think, is relevant. I think you can base it on the merits of the case and apply reasoned judgment. I think a couple of points that were mentioned, I'm not sure about misrepresenting anything. I think the facts that we've stated are listed directly from the register. The dates and timelines are there. We've actually listed from the National Register Bulletin, which addresses those specific points on why this project is questionable, I think, at best, to be actually a contributing member. I think I haven't heard many arguments that anyone said the actual Dirty Duck is worthy of preservation. More fears, goals, and policies about demolition in general. And I think as a reviewing body, you have the ability to work through that and make appropriate judgments. I think there's also been a little, I'm challenged to think that with the Blanche working on this project for 10 years and this site being identified for multiple years, that it's only in the last 2 or 3 weeks that certain parties have decided to try and engage in the process. It's been open. It's been very public. It's not been hidden or clandestine. Everyone has had an opportunity to come in and participate and to throw in last minute, did you think about this design or those kinds of things. In fact, we have reviewed many options, and this was the best option for the client and the mission and their goals and what they're trying to purvey and what they're trying to do. And so we have looked at that. I think maintenance through neglect, I think if you take a trained eye, you will find that the maintenance and neglect issues on the Dirty Duck have not occurred in the last 10 years. Have they been enhanced by them? No. That has been occurring for the last 60 years. No one has maintained that building. It's been in there long before PDC owned it. And to blame this or put this solely at PDC's feet, I think, is a little disingenuous at best. Dan? John?
I just have a couple things to add and maybe echo a little bit of what Joe said without trying to retread too much. Sorry. Dan Petrasich, Blanche House board member. We have been at this 10 years, and I think from the previous testimony, you know, we've got a lot invested both financially and we've also got a capital campaign that's well on its path. But I would like to also say there were 13 public meetings over a period of 2 years. Where was Landmarks? I mean, the chair is very involved in that neighborhood, never heard a thing. And I can tell you that there was broad support for this project. It was highly public and nearly unanimous that we go forward on the Dirty Duck side. So I think the opportunity was there, but was never taken. As far as the neglect of the Dirty Duck, that whether it was neglected or not, I don't know. It's an old building. Mildred Schwab owned it for the last, 20-some-odd years prior to PDC buying it. And I don't think Mildred was very tight with the city's money, and maybe she was with her own, but I don't think that she purposely tried to run this building into the ground so that somebody could somehow demolish it. And again, I want to thank you for allowing us to make this application. I think one of the most historic things that we're talking about today is the Blanchet House and its 58-year history on this block, and I think that's more important to preserve than the Kiernan Dirty Duck. Thank you.
John Smith with Sarah Architects. I just had a couple of concerns that I wanted to just touch on. There was a concern stated of the fact that there were no historic design guidelines for the neighborhood. And I just wanted to note that the project team, although there are no adopted guidelines for the district, that the project team is using the neighboring Skidmore Old Town design guidelines to influence our design and our decision that we will have to take before Landmarks again for a Type 3 design review. So there will be a review process that will be mandated. The other piece I just wanted to touch on briefly is precedent. There's been a lot of discussion about precedent. There is currently a very strong demolition review policy in place. I think that's identified by the fact that it's been in place for, you know, six or seven years at this point, and this is the first project that's ever gotten to this point. So I think, you know, something is working there. It's you know, I don't think precedent is going to be a strong concern. And then the last concern I just wanted to touch on was the fact that it was noted that this was a secondary resource and that does not mean it's a lower quality of building. And that is absolutely correct. However, I guess the point that we're trying to make is that the nomination itself identifies the property as only meeting criteria C. And the way that the nomination identifies meeting criteria C is it states that the building is considered to be contributing within the district during its secondary period of significance because of its association with architects McNaughton and Raymond. Based on criteria C, the National Park District Service definition states that properties must embody the distinctive characteristics of type, period, method of construction, or that representative of the work of a master.
And I need you to wrap
they're clearly
you're bordering on filibustering.
Not characteristic. So I leave it at that. But
thank you.
I think in the slides we identified that it is not the work of a master architect.
Thank you all very much. That leads us to council discussion. Any clarifications requested of staff would like to come forward? Okay. Yes, sir.
Tim Aaron, BDS. How many minutes?
Zero.
Sorry, excuse me. Keeping it light.
No, do we have staff at this point? Or we can ask questions of staff, right?
Yes.
Okay, we can ask you questions, and I appreciate yourself making yourself available. Are there questions from staff?
I'd be comfortable moving to council discussion.
Okay.
Mayor Adams?
Yes, Commissioner Leonard.
Well, the first thing I'd point out is Dan didn't help his case when he said that Mildred used to own that building. But in spite of that, per City Code 338460802C2, I would move approval of issuing a permit for the demolition of the Dirty Duck building on Block 25.
There's been a motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to proceed with issuing the permit.
Discussion?
We've got a couple timing issues here. Mayor, if you believe council's headed towards an approval, then we're going to have some time to revise the findings because the findings state otherwise.
So this would be staff. A tentative?
Tentative findings. Yeah.
And then we would schedule a time based on staff capacity to come back.
And we will also need the applicants. The 120-day rule is taking effect next Friday, and that's another problem we have. So on the record, I would like to ask that you ask the applicant to grant an extension of time for whatever the staff thinks they need to revise findings.
If the council votes this way, how much time do you need to revise the findings?
3 weeks would be ideal.
Okay. And would the applicants extend the statutory deadline by 30 days? There's only one. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
That was the right that was the right answer.
There's only one way forward for you if you prevail. Okay. Thank you. All right. Is then
brief discussion?
Brief discussion.
Mayor, I am most persuaded that the goals and policies set forth in the five different plans cited by the applicant tip the balance in favor of granting the relief. I am less persuaded by the argument on the reasonable economic benefit argument. And I, since this is the first one out of the chute, that one I have a little concern about because Kathy Galbraith talked about demolition by neglect. I don't think that directly applies here, but I would hate to send a message to any owner that in not maintaining the property, there is an argument at some point that mm-hmm. there's been some denial of that there's an economic benefit argument because of the cost of bringing it back to code or to maintaining it at a proper level. But I think in terms of the balancing test, if we look at the goals and policies set forth in at least five, if not more, of the plans, I think we have more than enough information to make out findings which would tip the balance in favor.
Other discussion? We'll have an opportunity to comment as we vote as well. All right. Carla, would you please call the vote?
One last thing. Mayor, you need to officially close the record, evidentiary record, if that's what the council is prepared to do.
I'm officially closing the evidentiary record. Carla, would you now please call the vote?
Fritz?
Finally, the gavel comes into great use. Thank you all for being here today. This is an important discussion that we have had, and I truly appreciate the services that the Blanchet House provides. There is no question that we want you to continue to serve the neediest folks in Portland in or close to the location where you currently are. So thank you for that. I support the staff recommendation as currently written. I think it's well, the analysis is done well, and I'm concerned about our historic resources. Once they're gone, they don't come back. We can't make any more of them. I would have liked to have seen more consideration for how to continue to use this building. It's not under the approval criteria to look at the parking lot, but it seems a shame that we've got a surface parking lot that's going to continue to be a surface parking lot. And I do. I thought that the evidence was compelling that was presented to us in terms of the different buildings that are contributing to this district and the overall character of the building, and even Dr. March's point that sometimes the lesser architectural buildings can point out the glory of the more splendid ones. I might have been more inclined to support the demolition if the proposals for the new building had been more in context of the district and the current building. So I do urge you to look at some more historic guidelines and look at the district some more and try to modify that, because if that was to come back to us on appeal as is, it doesn't to me, when you look at the proposed building, it doesn't shout Old Town Chinatown. And I think it would be helpful to me to the community, to the context of the historic district, to have a new building which shows greater respect for some of the features of the current building. So for those reasons, I don't support the motion. No.
Fish.
This has been a really helpful hearing. And to the opponents who testified, and at least one of whom said they were uncomfortable in the position of speaking against this, I would say this is a quasi-judicial hearing when the council is being asked to balance competing values. If people don't come forward who are opposed for any reason, then it's sort of like a one-sided trial. And so we appreciate that input. I appreciate that input because we are specifically required to balance different values. They may be competing, they may be complementary, but they usually are competing. And our charge is to weigh the evidence and to determine on balance whether a certain burden has been met. I appreciate staff's conservative approach to this matter because it's the first out of the chute. And I think that is appropriate, since while we're not setting precedent with a capital P, we are setting a framework that people can follow going forward. I, with all due respect, though, do not find the staff presentation compelling, other than to point out that the way we make our findings has to be carefully done so as to not suggest that it is a mission-driven determination as opposed to balancing other factors. So for me, it comes down to the fact that I take the plain wording of the statute, listen to the evidence, and in particular, the goals and policies set forth in the Portland Comprehensive Plan, the Central City Plan, Old Town Chinatown Development Plan, the 10-year plan to end homelessness, and the Shelter Reconfiguration Plan, all of which were adopted before I came to this body, but I think each of which has goals and policies which tip the scales. So I'm comfortable approving the demolition. I am less comfortable with the notion of the deprivation of reasonable economic benefit. That one, I think, invites some mischief. on behalf of property owners who would not, who would essentially be rewarded for not maintaining their property. And this question of aesthetics or whether it's a contributing structure or a primary structure, you know, we have a healthy debate on this panel as to whether, let's say, Memorial Coliseum is worthy of preservation. And I guess to a certain extent,
yes,
there is an aesthetic judgment we make. But when you look at the buildings that are of primary significance and you compare it to this building, I think we can all, as adults, make some distinction here. And this building is virtually falling down. And it doesn't, it just doesn't, it doesn't seem to have the same compelling rationale, at least in my balance test, as some of the other buildings that we have preserved. So we have to balance. It's an imperfect system, but I think the applicant has met their burden. And I would just urge my colleagues to ground this in the goals and policy set forth in the plans and not on the reasonable economic benefit deprivation argument. I support the approval of the demolition permit.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Well, I was somebody on the council who worked very hard with Mayor Vera Katz to have this type of demolition review process as a tool for the city. I felt it was unconscionable that historic buildings could be demolished without us having some say in that, and I still feel that way. So I'm really glad that this process is set up as it is. And it's a stringent process, and it's one that's designed to preserve historic resources. And I feel that I've learned a lot from this first go-round of this Type 4 review, and I've been sensitized to a lot of issues considering around historic districts' secondary resources. But nevertheless, I choose on this case to support the higher and better use argument here in terms of the important housing and social services that this proposal will provide compared to a secondary resource. I thought it was very interesting to hear about the nomination of the district specifically focusing on buildings significant to Chinese history, and this does not seem to fit into that category. And as I said in one of my earlier questions, the attributes of it, just the physical attributes of it, just don't rise in my mind to some of the other more important historic resources in the city. But nevertheless, I have been sensitized by this discussion, and I will definitely be scrutinizing. Hopefully, part of our reason we passed a stringent demolition review is we won't have cases like this before us. And I think, as Tim Heron mentioned, I think we've largely been successful. People don't demolish. They figure out a way to reuse or preserve. But in this case, I am going to vote to allow this project to go forward and therefore approve the demolition project permit. Aye.
Leonard.
I was here with Commissioner Saltzman when Mayor Katz asked that BDS develop the demolition review process. I was very supportive of that. I appreciate the staff's report in this current case. And I understand why they reasoned the way they reasoned. But I've also been here during the entire period of time when we discussed in quite emotional hearings the day access center being located on this same site. The community was quite clear about their desire for that not to be located there. We listened to that. And just as passionately, the community is arguing, and I think it can't be discounted, Stephen's argument from the Chinese community's perspective that this is not a contributing structure for the Chinese or Japanese community, and that there is a higher and better use of this site. And I was comforted by the response from Tim Heron to my question about the criteria that requires that we get to review the proposed structure that we place this current structure before we issue the demolition permit. And I think that's an important part of the process, and I think that shouldn't be taken lightly. So it is my intent, obviously, as the maker of the motion, to vote for the motion, but to also follow up and make sure that we have an appropriately designed structure that is complementary to the community, the unique community within which it will be constructed, but certainly I think that all agree that it will be a much more appropriate structure than what currently exists. Aye.
Adams.
Well, let me, this does not set a precedent.